Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk broadcast, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Our thanks to HighSpeedWeb.net for streaming our signal 24/7, 365. And there he is, ladies and gentlemen, the man, the myth, almost a legend, I guess.
At least in my own mind.
State Representative and the Speaker Pro Tem, Mr. Tommy Pope. How are you, Tommy?
Good to be here again today.
All right, you're off and running. It's a new session. I always liked it when Wes Hayes would say, everybody run and hide under the tables because we're back in session.
Yeah, I told you it was a variation at my house. I told my wife I didn't have that giddy back-to-school feeling when we were heading to Columbia. She didn't flinch. She said, good, don't go. And I said, well, I kind of made an obligation to go. So we've been in there a couple weeks now, so we're kind of getting back in the groove. And of course, we're in the second week of a two-year session now. I mean, second year of a two-year session.
Yeah, which means if it doesn't go by the end of this session,
then you get to start all over again.
You get to start all over again. Oh, boy. So with that being said, let's talk about the governor's of the state of South Carolina's almost $2 billion windfall. That, to me, is absolutely unbelievable. They'd have all that surplus cash.
Well, and, you know, one, I think it's, you know, legislature probably doesn't get credit for this, but I think it's been how we've managed the money in the past. And so this isn't all, you know, really a one-year return. It's over a period of years and some of the things we've done and, you know, in structuring our budgets. And so it's a good opportunity. It always terrifies me when people say, yeah, we've got to get to Columbia and figure out how to spend that money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my answer has always been, let's do some tax reform and dial that down. You could use this money to help pull some tax rates down. And hopefully there's some interest in that. But traditionally, you know, Columbia likes to spend that money. And so we'll see.
Well, the governor has already made it very clear that he wants, you know, the $50 rebate to become a $200 rebate.
Right.
And I think that's very appropriate.
Well, truthfully, you know, of course, we did it last year. I think what concerns me about that is not about getting money back to the taxpayers. It's that if you've got to spend almost $1 million to send the money back to the taxpayers, why don't we do it by reducing the rate so that it never leaves their pocket in the first place? And that I'm hopeful. Again, we did it last time. You and I discussed it. The governor made a promise. The governor had worked hard with the legislature, and we wanted to stick with that. I'm just thinking there could be better ways to address that than, you know, simply mailing the check back.
I wouldn't argue that. But, by the way, I'll be in Columbia probably later this week. Can I just stop by and pick up a couple of two $100 bills?
I think I got a couple just laying around somewhere. Mine are mostly in quarters, though, but I'll do what I can for you.
So with that being said, and you're very wise in saying tax reform should be done, you, more than most anybody I've known, if it hasn't been 5 years, it's probably 10 years that you've been working on tax. I can remember you sitting right here telling me about how you had spent your summer or about to spend your summer taking a look at all the special exemptions in the state code, and then you came back on a subsequent program. And I said, what happened with all that? Oh, it's up on a shelf someplace. Nobody's paying attention to it.
Well, and every year, you know, there's no wisdom in the 10th kick of a mule. You know, I keep going back and doing it again. At the end of last session, we ended up sending to Ways and Means an income tax reform bill and a sales tax reform bill. And as you and I discussed previously, they're basically templates. They removed all the exemptions, knowing full well that some would go back, you know, perhaps for our military or, you know, some of those. It's actually in Ways and Means. You know, the governor in his budget wanted to move the highest rate from 7 to 6. Our bill shot a little further and tried to move 7 to 4.75. And so what I'm hopeful you can do, and I've talked to the speaker about it, as they try to work with the governor's request, is maybe take the bill we sent to Ways and Means and look at pulling the rates down, and you can do it with what's called triggers or circuit breakers. And what it is you're looking at the economy, you're measuring as the money goes. If it doesn't reach a certain recovery or a certain level, you can stop the downward departure, so to speak. You know, right. In other words, you don't get locked in and throw your budget off kilter. But I would prefer to put circuit breakers and triggers in and go ahead and target all the way. My biggest fear is we go from 7 to 6. We say we've had tax reform, and we move on and, you know, put a check mark in that box. And so I'm hopeful that more can be done this year.
Is it feasible to even talk about South Carolina becoming, let's say, like Texas or Florida, where we don't have a state income tax?
Heck, I can't get them to move one percentage. You want me to knock the whole thing out? I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily wise. The missing component, if you remember, over the years, we talked about sales tax. We talked about income tax. The elephant in the room's always been property tax. And that's because that's so tied to educational funding. We heard a good bit of testimony about that over the last few years with the committee, you know, as far as it's second home rentals and the cost or the small business paying 6% instead of 4%. And so we're poised to at least try to tackle it as a committee. The truth is we're waiting to see what proposal comes from the speaker and from the educational folks as far as educational funding, because they're so intertwined. As you know, you know, anybody looks at their tax bill, you're lucky you don't pay tax on your home, but you sure as heck pay school tax, you know. And so hopefully that's something we can address. But we're really going to have to be creative on the school funding part and then figure out where we can bring property tax around to address it.
I'm not sensing a great deal of optimism from what you're saying that we're going to see any real tax reform.
Was it year 1 or 2 or 3 or 8 or 9 that you think I lost that tone in my voice? I think we will actually see something done this time. Again, you know, my second level frustration has been how many things I've been able to get involved with and get passed, or we've gotten passed in the House, only to see them sit in the Senate. You know, some of the things we talked about before, low-hanging fruit like the terrorism bill, and yet it languishes in a Senate subcommittee. I have a simple bill my farmers had asked me about that basically says instead of a trespassing sign on property, you could paint the post and the tree with purple paint. They laughed all the way through the House as we got that bill passed, but it sits in the Senate. You know, when you can't pass simple stuff, I do get a little jaded when it comes to bigger things.
So when you talk to your counterpart, Mr. Clymer, Senator Clymer,
right,
and you tell him that you can't get the purple tree bill through, what's he say to you?
He says, we're going to do our best. You know, he hadn't been opposed to anything, the terrorism bill, the purple paint bill, anything, but unfortunately they hadn't seemed to have much success in getting it passed either.
Well, there's all kinds of ways you could spend that $1.8 billion, but you're right. Tax reform this is the ideal opportunity,
right,
to make a giant step forward.
You know, and again, you know, I know a lot will be spent on trying to shore up our teachers, which I think is important. I think the teachers are probably fortunate that this money showed up at the same time. You know, as I've told you in the past, unfortunately, in the legislature, it always seems flavor of the day. You know, I told you back when I was prosecutor, it was fighting drug crime, so I was able to build the solicitor's office through that type funding. And so I think it's a good time from an educational standpoint financially. But we need to make bigger plans and how we do things long term instead of just trying to patch it with money, I think.
Well, you've also heard an awful lot about higher education. The governor wants to take another pot of money and put it towards holding down tuition.
Right.
And also to give the higher education money to do long overdue maintenance on buildings. Here's a perfect example,
sure,
right over here.
Sure.
I gather that's going to have some legs?
I would hope so. You know, the Ways and Means subcommittees are working on those various things now. You know, a mistake we made, again, probably because of politics, was not borrowing money years ago you know, for when the bond bill could have come through that could have fixed all this deferred stuff. And, you know, I remember Governor Haley going, oh, well, we don't want to borrow money. Well, smart business people borrow money when the interest rate's low and put that money to work.
Yep.
See, where we're at now, we've let things get worse, and now we're going to try to pay cash for it. And so, you know, that's an opportunity that passed, but we need to take care of these things. It's frustrating year in, year out. We're dealing with educational issues, and it seems like, much like the tax debate, we end up revisiting the same issues over and over and over.
Well, speaking of money, what is your prognosis for Santee Cooper and how we're going to resolve this?
You know, I am cautiously optimistic that the Department of Administration that's doing the review will give a balanced, fair review. It concerns me sometimes when different folks say we need to do the review so we can sell it, or we need to do the review so we can do this, because if it's truly an objective review, we want to know from a business standpoint what is the best idea on it. And so if I'm not mistaken, I think the Department of Administration had asked for a little more time past their deadline. I think it's this month, but anyway, just a little more time to finish up, kind of an extension to finish up their due diligence, and then I think we'll tackle it and debate it. I just want the whole legislature just to have an open mind, take what they're giving us. I mean, obviously make our own decisions, but, you know, I'm not predisposed now one way or another. I want to hear it out.
It's going to be interesting because I think the biggest, the governor wants to sell it. No question about that. He wants to get that monkey off his back, $4 billion in debt that's hanging out there, which the ratepayers of Santee Cooper are going to have to pay, and ultimately, I guess, South Carolina will end up paying if it goes upside down. Do you really think, I know one option is to just get some new people in and let Santee reorganize itself and run it. Do you think that really has a whole lot of opportunity?
You know, it's almost like a caretaker component or a new management component. It's almost three things, you know, like letting the outside company buy it, letting the outside company management, or like you said, kind of retooling. And again, I'd like to hear more, you know, kind of brass tacks on each of those and their merits. I will tell you, and you and I've had this discussion before, I know how our co-op runs here and the tight ship they run and the good things they do. So I do defer a lot to Paul and the folks up at the co-op and their insight on these issues, much like that. Hopefully they would listen to me on criminal justice issues or attorney issues. And so as it unfolds, I'll be consulting our co-op folks for sure.
Well, they're the biggest customer of Santee Cooper statewide.
Absolutely.
So obviously they've got a keen amount of interest in this thing. You wonder whether you could ever work out the numbers where the co-ops would just take it over and run it.
I know there was, you know, when you finally have a bidder or a buyer, I know that was that discussion. I don't know where that discussion's at, but I know early on that was a possibility, and I think there's something to be said for that, too.
Mm. All right, back to education. I guess it's fair to say that the legislature is in the second year of, I don't know what it's going to be, a 3 or 4 year period where you're going to boost the salaries of the educators. I think they're talking this year about $3,000 across the board. No matter
where they are,
they're going to give them $3,000 more, which is great. That's a great step in the right direction. I keep coming back to saying we all know how competitive it is out there to attract the brightest and the best. Industry is flourishing, the economy is red hot, and they demand, you know, certain levels of performance by all of those who are coming out of school. So if we want the best and brightest minds to come out of the school, how are we going to accomplish that if we don't have the best and brightest teachers in the school?
I think that's a reasonable question.
I just seem to think that the whole concept of the pay scale, the way it goes now, it's just, it's,
well,
crazy.
You know, I said that one time before, and I was not justifying what happens. I was just observing that traditionally it seems like we pay those that do something for a calling, like teachers and police officers. You know, in the old days, they got paid less, but you knew they were going to do it because there were people that were called to do those kind of jobs. I see that changing. You know, because the burdens of the jobs, you know, it's not as attractive to be a police officer. It's not as attractive to be a teacher anymore. I think we've got to do it not only for the right reasons of properly compensating the people that are providing these services, but also to recognize it's getting harder and harder to hire a teacher. Harder and harder to hire a police officer. We've got to wake up to that issue. Truth is, I wish we could do it and tackle it. I'm kind of back to the flavor of the month. I wish we could recognize that for law enforcement. I wish we could recognize that for our state employees at the same time and try to float all boats. But with that being said, I want anything positive that can happen for our teachers to happen, you know.
Well, it seems, again, we get back to this large surplus that the state of South Carolina has, that, boy, this gives you an opportunity to really rethink the whole compensation system for teachers. But the other part of that thing is, you know, it's interesting that when they survey all the teachers, salary isn't the number one issue. The number one issue is the discipline in the classroom.
I was going to say quality of life, yeah. The ability to teach. Well, and with discipline also is the issue of testing. You know, when they're spending all their time preparing from some test that they're not even going to get the data back to be able to use to help the student, you know, it's just an exercise in futility. And so the bill we passed last week, one of the bills actually targeted that to just try to reduce the amount of testing. It's difficult because certainly we want the schools to be accountable. It goes back to what you're saying. You want the best and brightest, and you want them trained by the best and brightest, but you want to make sure what you believe your money's being spent for is being done. But somewhere we lost our way, either the federal testing, the state testing, or the district testing. We're testing, instead of teaching. Yeah. And we'll use that for a slice, garden next time. No more test. We need to teach.
But I still don't understand how you go about tackling the discipline issue. Because that goes right back to what's happened with the American family as we know it today. It's just not like it used to be, where you have a mom and dad in both cases and the discipline being handed out.
I was sharing with a teacher the other day. You know, I've spent most of my life, you know, going to the schools and speaking, whether it was a solicitor, legislator, attorney. And the last couple of times I've gone to the schools, and it would be the advanced class. And you got three that are you know, asleep while I'm talking, and four on the phone and not looking. And luckily for me, that wasn't my job. I was there because I wanted to be. But, you know, I remember thinking while I was doing it, it's hard for me to care when the people I'm there to help don't care. So it's a tough plight for teachers, and I don't know how you change it. I do notice, you know, the ways we teach and, for lack of a better term, the accommodations they're willing to make for kids seem tremendous. You know, if you and I didn't learn the way the teacher was teaching, we'd either be at the principal's office or outside standing in the hall. Yeah. Of course, little Tommy's done all of the above. You know, but
and I did not want to go home to have Ned meet me either.
Absolutely.
No, exactly.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Now, as Tommy pointed out, we do broadcast live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, where we have fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes, 7 days a week. There's a magical way it's done. It's called the white letters here, and everybody yells it out at the same time at the count of three. One, two, three. Slice.
Garden.
Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
I love their fresh meats and the sweet wheat bread.
The bread, their quality meats, and their prices.
It's just always a great, consistent meal.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration. When you are faced with damage to your home, there's only one company you need to know, Paul Davis Restoration. Only one company with 50 years of corporate support and 20 years of local presence. Only one company with 8 trained and certified water mitigation techs on call and ready to respond to your loss 24/7, 365. There is only one company you need to know. Call Paul Davis Restoration, 803-329-1140.
These days, there are plenty of ways to stay connected to the internet. Laptops, phones, tablets, games, you name it. But the more devices you use in your home, the tougher it is to get a strong, consistent Wi-Fi signal. Comporium's premium Wi-Fi kit adds multiple Wi-Fi access points throughout your home, eliminating dead zones and interference, while spreading your signal more evenly so you can enjoy a better online experience. Right now, get our premium Wi-Fi for only $9.99 per month. Premium Wi-Fi from Comporium. Connect your whole home.
Now available from Founders Federal Credit Union, Edge Up. Edge Up is the newest and easiest way to fund Founders Loyalty Select, our highest yield savings account. Enroll in Edge Up today, and any purchases made with your Founders debit card may qualify for daily Edge Up transfers. Log in to Founders Online to enroll today. Relax, we're giving you an edge on your savings. Account restrictions apply, federally insured by NCUA.
Good Pharmacy, with a modern look and traditional standards.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. All six of our pharmacists love serving you and your children. Ask us about alternatives for your child's medicine.
My mommy loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
Such distinguished people frequent this place. Enjoy that, and the food is delicious.
The salads are the best in town.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, State Representative and Speaker Pro Tem of the South Carolina House of Representatives. Tommy Pope is with us today, and you might want to explain very quickly, in layman's terms, what the Speaker Pro Tem really does. I see it as you're doing all the stuff that the Speaker doesn't want to do. Is that about right?
I'm a little more generous. I say I have all the same powers as the Speaker as long as he's in the bathroom or something, but... You know, you're kind of the substitute. You're the number two guy. As I always told you, there's a steep drop in power from the number one guy to the number two guy. But I do get to preside a lot. He'll assign me to special committees when he needs something taken care of. I don't serve on, you know, like I used to be on judiciary. You know, now as pro tem, I don't serve on any committee, but I can kind of sit in on any of them. And so I've enjoyed it. I enjoy, you know, I do seem to sometimes preside when things are getting heated or hot. And but Speaker lets me do it, and I actually enjoy doing it.
All right, let me bring you back home here. You guys worked feverishly last year to change the state laws that would allow a professional sporting team like the Carolina Panthers to be treated just like a new industry coming to town.
Right, right.
So they could get the same kind of benefits from the state and the local localities. We're here now, my gosh, how many months into this thing? I don't know when that bill passed, but it's been 6, 8, 10 months, something like that. We're still, you know, don't have a final deal. What do you know about what's going on with this thing?
I probably have limited knowledge, maybe by design, but... You know, it's kind of a variation of what I was telling you. Sometimes my frustration that we tackle something in the House and it can't get finished in the Senate. Apparently, there's some issues they're wrestling with on the local level. I don't know if you recall when you and I first talked about it back at the beginning. I said this thing will be great as long as the legislature or the councils, you know, don't mess it up. I'm paraphrasing what I said. But so I'm not sure. I mean, I get doing your due diligence. I get dotting your I's and crossing your T's. But I just pray that we're not playing politics to show who's the most important individual in the room. Because fortunately, unfortunately, the guy that owns the Panthers could pretty much go anywhere he wants to and any time he wants to, I believe. And I think if this did not work out, it would be a loss for York County in the long run. We've got to see bigger than whether there's a football team coming and look at, you know, what's happened in Texas and the potential for growth and the potential for opportunities. And hopefully it'll work itself out.
Well, you know, I told you this before when we got on the air. I think one of the issues that this particular opportunity presents itself is the fact that our election system in York County is crazy. We've got seven little districts. It's like everybody has a fiefdom.
Right.
And we don't have any at-large representation, which is very unusual. You know, like in the city of Rock Hill, the mayor is elected at-large. And the governor is elected at-large. You would think we would at least have a council chairman or one or two districts that had an at-large representation so we could try to break this fiefdom mentality.
You know, and I think it comes down to the people that serve, because I was thinking in the House or the Senate, for example, we're all representing I represent just York County, but I do recognize when I voted for the deepening of the port in Charleston, how even though that technically wasn't in York or Clover, affects all of us. And I am hopeful that our county council, and I don't see any reason to say not, that these issues aren't hung on to. Again, I represent York and Clover. I'm not voting for the Panthers because that's going to be in Rock Hill, not in York or Clover. Because the ripple effects of what this will bring will be tremendous for this county, you know, well past mine and your lifetime.
You know, you use that terminology, ripple effect, and, of course, that can work both ways as well.
You can turn a boat over if you're not careful.
You can turn a boat over is exactly right. And to use that analogy, we all know the grand ceremony that was held down at Knowledge Park. The governor and every high-ranking official, including you all, were there. Tepper was there. I mean, it was a big, 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 big fanfare. And I got to think, you know, the governor's got a lot of time and effort and energy. He's put his reputation on the line with this thing. That ripple effect could really turn around and boomerang York County if it doesn't go through.
It would be unpleasant. I am hopeful. Again, I want to be respectful of the folks with the county if that's where the issues lie now, and them doing their due diligence and doing what they think they need to do. Hopefully they can see it through and not try to, again, prove who has the most power in the room. Let's do what's best for the citizens and move on.
Okay, let's move on, as the man said. Hard to believe we're in election year, and that means everybody in the General Assembly is up for re-election.
Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
So I just you have opposition this year.
I believe I will. I've been told that I will. You know what I always do is run my race, and if somebody's running, I guess I'll see them at the debate. You know.
So you're going to run again.
That is my intention now, unless Kim Pope hears this and tells me otherwise when I get home. You know?
Yes, honey, you're right, honey. It was all my fault, honey. I got it. All right. The Daylight Savings Time Bill. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
It's funny. I've never seen, going back to Kim Pope, some family member more interested in anything I've done in Columbia. But she goes, when does it take effect? I said, well, baby, we got to wait on the feds and, you know, what they would do. But I think it feels to me from the folks I talk to that the time has come. Again, what you hope is, with many things, you hope the feds will tackle it so that it's you know, not a patchwork, you know, where you go to Charlotte and suddenly it's an hour later or vice versa, you know. So hopefully that'll be addressed. But, you know, when I first heard it, I said, that just seems like we could be doing something better with our time, you know. But truly, I think it's important to people and they'd like to see it stabilized. So.
Listen. Kim Pope needs to talk to Sheila Kimmel because she would; those two would be bonded at the hip.
I'm all for getting that extra hour of sleep, not so much for losing it.
So the process is our General Assembly would have to pass the bill.
Yeah, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the one bill we just passed, and I believe I'm correct on this, was a Senate bill. So it's ready. But the language in it says, if the feds decide, whatever it is, whether it's to allow or to do or whatever, in other words, we wouldn't have to spend another year or two debating it. We're ready then when it happens.
But there's already a handful of states that ignore it. Why do we have to wait for the feds' approval?
I'm not sure what the language in there that was. And again, it might be back to that uniformity issue we were talking about.
All right. So we've got 30 seconds left. What do you want to see come out of this General Assembly? What's the most important thing that Tommy Pope to come out of this?
It, you know, I want to help our teachers, but for me it continues to be real tax reform.
And you got your fingers crossed.
I've been crossing my eyes and fingers and toes for years. We'll keep going, but we got some financial opportunities, so hopefully that's something we can do.
Well, you're right. When you got a surplus like the state of South Carolina has right now, this is a great chance to really do something. And we haven't even talked about this. The tax code, which is tax reform, where we're putting all that burden on the businesses. I got you.
Right.
Tommy Pope,
absolutely.
Thank you for everything that you do down there in Columbia, and look forward to having you back again.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate
State
it.
State Representative Tommy Pope, the Speaker Pro Tem of the South Carolina House of Representatives, our guest today on Straight Talk, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Of course, we hang out here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week. And there's a magical way that you do it. It's all in the white letters, and we all say it together at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice.
Yard. Hot bed. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.